Mr. Coleman?
Thank you. So, Dr. Hathaway, we are looking at the excerpt of your testimony from the Washington docket, UE130043. And if you could turn to the page that's identified as page number 5 in OCS cross exhibit number 1. I'd like to read the answer that you give at the bottom of page 5 that spills over to the top of page 6. Again, I'll go ahead and read and correct me if I misstate anything. Your statement, your testimony in the Washington docket reads, quote, growth for the U.S. economy is improving, but is expected to remain slow in the near term. While most economists expect the growth rate to be positive, unemployment is also expected to remain stubbornly high, near the 8% range. Forecasts for 2013 and beyond indicate continuing recovery with new job creation a fundamental concern. Based on these conditions, the Fed has announced its intention to keep interest rates at their current historically low levels, period, end quote. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
So to the Washington Commission, you testified of the Fed's intention to keep interest rates low, correct?
At the time, that's what they said.
And is that the same testimony that you present to the Utah Commission here today? But your concern is that in Utah, your testimony is that they're phasing out the accommodative policies, that doesn't exist any longer.
Well, it doesn't. There's a footnote after the piece of the Washington testimony that explains exactly what I said, again, with the Fed's press release at the time. Time has passed, and the policy has changed.
You turn to your sir rebuttal testimony, and at this point in time, I'm not going to move for the admission of OCS cross exhibit number 1 because I have some attention to return to it, so I want to make sure that it's complete before I move its admission. Just to make sure that you're aware, I'm not forgetting to do that. In your rebuttal testimony, table 2, June 13th, which was the date of this, of the Fed policy statement that you quoted, you represent that the single A utility long-term interest rate was 4.53%, correct?
I see that, yes.
And then giving a little bit of time to respond to the concern that you believe exists in the Fed policy statement, July 4.68%, correct?
Yes.
And then the most recent number that you have is April of 2014 of 4.41%, so that's a decrease.
A small one, yes.
A decreasing trend. And then from your testimony, the date of your...
No, I'm sorry, not a decreasing trend, sir.
Okay, a decrease.
It is.
Okay. So if we go to the time of your direct testimony, December of 2013, in this table, you have a 4.81% compared to the April of 2014 of 4.41%. So that's also a decrease.
I'm sorry.
4.41 in April of 14 is lower than 4.81 in December of 2013.
Yes, and as I acknowledged in my summary, interest rates have come down since the beginning of the year.
And then you would agree then that there is a decreasing trend from December of 2013 through April of 2014. The move is consistently downward in that.
Since December.
Okay.
But a trend depends on when you start. And as I explained, relative to 2012, we're still 50 basis points higher than we were back at that time.
And relative to your direct testimony, we're down 40 basis points.
Relative to December of 2013, yes.
Okay. then looking at the 30-year Treasury rate, the same time frames, let's go with July of 2013, it is 3.61% in your chart, and it reduces down to 3.52% in April of 2014. Correct?
We've switched now from June to July, because it's higher than it was in June that you asked me about before, but
no,
it's slightly lower than July.
July of 2013 is 3.61, correct?
Okay, I see that, yes.
And then April of 14 is 3.52, correct?
Right.
Correct?
Right, I agree with you.
And do you know what the close was yesterday?
About 3.3.
May I approach? To you, my tablet device, which is connected to the building's wireless. It's at money.cnn.com/data/markets. You could just look right here, 30-year Treasury previous yield was close of yesterday.
I want a tablet.
I'll be happy.
It rounds to 3.3. It's 3.29.
3.29.
I'm just kidding. I do want a tablet, but I don't expect you to give me one.
So today's rate, or yesterday's rate of 3.29, is a further reduction from the number you have of April 14 of 3.52.
That's right. But it's still higher than 2012.
Further in your rebuttal testimony, on line 245. Actually, my apologies. Your direct testimony. Trying to keep my papers straight. Direct testimony, line 257.
Okay, I have that.
And then we will spill over a little bit to the next page. Your testimony reads, quote, over the past 5 years, average allowed ROEs have ranged between 9.9% and 10.6%, period, end quote. I read that correctly?
Yes.
And then you have a table 3 that, in a different manner, I want to say graphically, but I don't think that's the correct term, represents that same bit of information, correct? You have the authorized equity returns for vertically integrated electric utilities from 2009 and up to the then present time of the third quarter of 2013. Presents
right.
The same information, 10.6 to 9.9 range.
Yes, that's right.
So it does range between those, but in your table 3, there's additional information that you can read from it. And that would be that there is, in fact, a downward trend, that the 10.6 is 2009, which is followed by an full-year average of 10.38 in 2010, 10.25 in 2011, 10.10 in 2012, and the then-current number in 2013 of 9.90. That's a downward trend?
That is a downward trend.
So then if we turn to your rebuttal testimony, goes a little bit further. The 2009 drops off due to simply the scale, I suppose, of the table.
Can you give us a page number, please?
That is page 7 of the rebuttal testimony, table 1.
Thank you.
So to kind of flip back and forth between these two, the 2009 full year average was 10.63, and that falls off in this rebuttal table. The then current number and your direct of the 2003 full year average was 9.90. The full year turned out to be 9.93. And then the first quarter of 2014, your table indicates 9.86. So that would be a further decrease in the trend. That's another lower number moving from 10.63 through the spectrum to 9.86.
It depends on how you look at those quarterly numbers, obviously. Well, some people have said that 2013, when rates popped up in the third quarter a bit, was sort of the bottom of the trend. The difference between 9.9 or 9.93 and 9.86 is certainly not a trend. So it's a very small difference. Most people believe that allowed ROEs for integrated electrics have bottomed out. That allowed rates of return for integrated electric companies have bottomed out.
Okay, but if you plot it on a graph, the numbers 10.63, 10.38, 10.25, 10.10, 9.93, and 9.86, that would be a line moving from left to right that slopes downward.
It slopes downward, but the bottom end of it sort of flattens out. That's all I'm saying.
But with a downward slope.
Flattens out.
May or may not have an asymptote, but the slope is downward.
Yes.
Okay. Now, staying in your rebuttal testimony, line 245, page 13.
Okay, I'm there.
Again, I'll go ahead and read. Correct me if I misstate. Your testimony reads, quote, "The market cost of equity is not lower today than it was in 2012 or during the past 2 years, while interest rates were forced by government intervention to historically low levels," period, end quote. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
And Ms. Schmidt talked to you before, but you did, in fact, provide testimony to this commission on behalf of the company in docket 11-035-200, correct?
Yes.
And I would ask the commission to take administrative notice of Dr. Hadaway's testimony in that docket 11-035-200.
Any objections?
Do you recall the cost, your cost of equity recommendation in that docket?
Mr. Coleman, let me just reflect. Your request is granted.
Thank you.
I'm afraid I'll get all the cases mixed up.
Okay.
But I think it was 10.2, if that's where you're going.
I believe it was.
Okay.
So, and your recommendation today is 10.0%.
Correct.
And so 10.0 is less than 10.2, correct?
Yes.
So your opinion is that the cost of equity is lower today based upon your recommendation than it was in your recommendation in the docket 11-035-200?
It depends on the time periods. Obviously, that docket number has an 11 in front of it, not 12. Mm-hmm. And my opinion is that my statement in the testimony that you read is that the cost of equity has not gone down since 2012. It certainly was trending downward, as you correctly pointed out, during the 2011 time frame. In 2012, it trended down a little bit more, and in 2013, the first three quarters, it actually went up a little bit. So it's a little bit in the eye of the beholder, but you're using 2011 data to ask me about something I said about 2012.
That was your testimony about what the rates were going to be during that rate effective period, correct?
I'm not sure what you're saying there.
The testimony that you provided in that docket was reflective of a test period, a forward-looking test period, correct?
I don't know. It may have been.
You don't know whether or not the company uses a forward-looking test period?
I know it does in this case. I don't know if it did back then or not.
Okay. So your concern is that the docket has an 11, and we're talking about 2012, and therefore you think that those are have a disconnect?
Well, you read a sentence from line 245 on page 13 of my current rebuttal testimony that says that I don't believe the cost of equity has declined since 2012. And then you started asking me about some testimony that has a docket number that begins with 11 and was prepared on data even before that. So the two are, I'm just saying they're a little bit inconsistent.
Do you know the date of your direct testimony in docket 11-035-200?
No.
Would you agree with me, subject to check, that that was February 15th, 2012?
Probably was.
Did you provide rebuttal testimony in that docket?
The case settled, but I believe I did.
Okay. Do you know the date that you provided that rebuttal testimony?
No.
Would you agree with me, subject to check, that it was June 27th, 2012?
Okay.
Do you recall your recommendation in that rebuttal testimony?
I think we stayed with the 10.2.
So, subject to check, on June 27th, 2012, you recommended an appropriate ROE of 10.2 in the year of 2012, was
during
your testimony.
During that time period, interest rates were trending down because of the quantitative easing program, and I explained in that testimony that I thought that was an artificial reduction to the cost of interest rates and that that shouldn't be used to push the ROE down further. The company and the other parties ultimately settled for 9.8, and I believe it was in September of 2012, the commission approved the 9.8. So through that time period, interest rates did indeed trend down, and now they have trended up from there. And so that's really, we just have to be careful about the time period so we don't get a mismatch.
But your testimony is that the cost of equity has not gone down from 2012, but your recommendation has gone down from 2012.
But my recommendation has not gone down from the 9.8 to which the parties agreed.
But your recommendation in 2012, your testimony, was 10.2.
Yes.
And your recommendation today is 10.0.
That's right.
And 10.0 is less than 10.2.
It is.
We can go back to, if I can go back, to your rebuttal testimony in this case. To table one. And again, the piece of testimony that we're trying to focus on at this point in time is your testimony that the market cost of equity is not lower today than it was in 2012. If we look at table one, the annual average was 10.10, correct?
Yes.
And then the annual average of authorized equity returns for vertically integrated electric utilities in 2013 was 9.93, correct?
That's right.
Which is less than 10.10.
That's right.
And for the first quarter of 2014, you represent the number was 9.86, correct?
Yes.
Which is also less than 10.10.
Yes.
And according to your chart, there are 32 commissions that have issued authorized equity returns for vertically integrated electric utilities, the majority of which are less than 10.10.
Objection, misstates the testimony.
I believe the table indicates in 2013 the number of cases is indicated as 30, and the number of cases that lead to the 9.86 in 2014 is 2. And so I believe the table indicates that 32 commissions, there have been 32 cases that result, well, let me restate it. 30 cases that average to 9.93, correct?
That's right.
And two cases that average to 9.86.
Yes.
But it's your opinion then, with your testimony, that the market cost of equity is not lower today than it was in 2012, that the majority of those 32 commissions got it wrong.
That's quite a bit of an overstatement on your part. The in September, when this case, the prior case was settled in 2012, the quarterly average was 9.9. You can see that right on that table. 9.9 is the quarterly average was 9.9. That's when the prior case, the party settled for 9.8 here. All I'm saying in the testimony that you read a while ago is that the cost of equity has not gone down since that 9.9 was set.
No, your testimony.
9.8 was set, excuse me.
Your testimony reads, the market cost of equity is not lower today than it was in 2012.
And the discussion there is about the case that was settled in 2012 in September, approved by the commission. And that's all my testimony may not be very artfully worded, but that's all I was saying there.
Well, if you could turn to page 13 of your rebuttal testimony. In the majority of page 13 of your rebuttal testimony, including the sentence that we've been talking about, is in response to a question that reads, what are your responses to Mr. Peterson's DCF growth rate selections? Now, I don't see anywhere in that answer a discussion of specifically the settled case in 2000, the case that was settled and approved by the commission in September 2012.
No, so Mr. Coleman, on that particular page, it's not there. But if you go back earlier in the testimony, I explained that the commission reviewed the division and the office testimony in the Questar case and said that the numbers that you had in those cases were too low to support that company's operations properly, and that your current recommendations are even lower. That's what all this is leading from into a statement that since the 9.8 was settled in the 2012 case, the cost of equity has not gone down, and I don't believe it has. In fact, I think it's gone up.
Okay, well, I would submit that your testimony doesn't say that. But
well, we have a disagreement, but, I mean, you have to look at the whole piece.
I think
and
your
you
testimony
can select pieces out of it like this and try to, you know, sort of like 2012 versus 2011. We have to look at the whole thing to be fair about it.
Well, I believe I read the sentence in total. So, but your testimony saying that is that the market cost of equity is not lower today than it was in 2012, and the 2012 average that you represent in Table 1, annual average, is 1.10, and there are 30 decisions that average to a number that's lower than 1.10, which was the 2012 average, annual average, and two decisions that average to 9.86. And so you believe that the majority of those 32 decisions should have been higher than what they resulted?
I'm going to object. I think it's been asked and answered. I think it's argumentative. And I think it also misrepresents the testimony again. And I'll tell you why I think it misrepresents the testimony so that we don't have to waste a lot of time. You keep saying majority. It's an average. So there's no majority involved.
Dr. Hadaway, would you answer the question, please?
Yes, I'll try.
It's cross-examination, and we've been over the ground a great deal, but I think it's appropriate to allow
my
latitude
point
here.
And I wasn't even trying to be argumentative about this, but yes, you read one sentence correctly, and so far today you've asked me to confirm that you've read half a dozen or more sentences correctly. But if you go back and read the testimony that leads up to that sentence, you can start on page 1 where I explain what's happened since 2012. And if I didn't state that artfully on that one page where I was rebutting Mr. Peterson, then maybe I should have written it better. But what you're saying is not what the testimony reflects, is the problem I'm having. So I disagree with you.
All right. You would agree with me, though, that capital costs are composed of debt costs and equity costs?
Yes.
And you would agree that, based upon Mr. Williams' testimony previously today, that the debt cost component of that formula has decreased for the company?
That's the embedded cost of debt, yes.
So there's a decrease in the debt cost?
In the embedded cost of debt, there have been increases and decreases in the marginal interest rate, the current market interest rate, which is how we go about trying to set the equity rate of return. So they're two different things.
The company's cost of debt decreased with their most recent bond issuance from their expected.
Yes, that's what he said.
And your recommendation today of 10.0 is less than your recommendation in 2012 of 10.2.
That's right.
So the equity component of that has decreased at least 20 basis points, in your opinion.
Not an equity return that the company was authorized. They were authorized 9.8.
But your opinion about your recommendation is lower today for the equity cost component of the capital cost than it was in the prior case.
The recommendation is lower, but my opinion of the cost of equity is that it has gone up since the 9.8% was established.
In your direct testimony, line 188, it reads, interest rates are expected to rise further during the coming year, correct?
That's right.
And your table 2 indicates that the expected 30-year treasury for the close of 2014 was 4.1%, correct?
Yes.
And we just looked at significantly lower than that yesterday.
It is, yes, it certainly is.
And then if we look at your rebuttal testimony, table 2, we've already talked about the downward slope from the time of the presentation of your direct to the presentation of your rebuttal testimony, correct? We did talk about that. Yes?
That interest rates have gone down since then? Yes, of course.
So when you claim in your rebuttal testimony on line 20 that interest rates have stabilized, that might be a conservative characterization of the events from December to the present.
Mr. Coleman, you're right about that, and I changed that word in editing this testimony at least in one other place, and I think two, to say dropped.
Okay.
So it's in this same testimony that I said interest rates have dropped.
All right. Line 245 of your rebuttal testimony. We're back to this again. We're going to go ahead a little bit further from where we've read before. So we've read 245 through 247, that first half of 247 a couple of times. I'll go ahead and finish the next sentence. And again, the concern here is whether market costs of equity are lower. Line 247 continues to read, quote, until that intervention has ceased and reasonable equilibrium has returned between debt and equity markets, DCF estimates of COE, regardless of the growth rate inputs, will remain unreliable, period, end quote. Correct? Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
So your concern in that section of 245 through 249 is the government intervention keeping interest rates at a historically low level and the resulting lack of equilibrium in the equity markets.
We're going to get into it again, Mr. Coleman. That one sentence is a summary of things that I've explained previously in the other parts of the testimony. And it is true that the tapering of long-term asset purchases of the Federal Reserve System will continue on through December. Now, what we've seen is that as this process has started and interest rates did move up back in parts of 2013, the cost of equity indicated by the DCF model actually continued to go down. And my explanation here is that that indicates there's something wrong with that model. When you have interest rates go up 50 to 100 basis points and your cost of equity models are saying that the cost of equity has dropped by 50 basis points or more, then you need to rethink whether that model is in sync with what's happening. And that's all that I'm explaining here in that one sentence that you read. There's not all that explanation, but that's what I've said previously in the testimony.
Okay. So just in line 143 of your rebuttal testimony, again, I want to make sure, perhaps I just don't understand. It reads, the Fed has held interest rates at record low levels in an effort to stimulate the economy, while the Fed has announced and begun efforts to taper its accommodative monetary policies, the effects continue to restrain interest rates and boost stock prices. So, am I correct in understanding that one of your concerns about the market, the current market pressures, is the intervention and the imposition of federal accommodative monetary policies? Is that correct?
I'm not sure I understood your question.
One of you outline a number of concerns that you have with the current market and the reasons that you believe that the discounted cash flow model, for example, doesn't provide reliable results. And one of those pressures is the government's accommodative monetary policies, correct?
Yes, that's right.
And the resultant, in your opinion, artificially low interest rates.
Which then result in artificially low dividend yields because utility stock prices have been pushed up by people seeking income. Again, I explained all of that in great detail in my direct testimony.
Okay. And then with respect to some of the equity risk premium analyses in your, in your rebuttal line 272, you state, the government's intervention in the debt markets has produced artificially low interest rates, and in this environment, COE models that are affected by those rates cannot produce market-based estimates of the cost of equity. For the CAPM and most other risk premium models, the effect is direct, with low COE estimates tracking the low interest rates, period, end quote. Correct?
That's right.
Okay. So if we look, I apologize for flipping back and forth, but in your direct testimony, table 4 of your direct testimony, just a summary of your cost of equity estimates, it's on page 29. The the risk premium analysis that you employ is not the CAPM, correct?
That's right.
And not the arbitrage pricing theory?
No.
But rather the a forecasted utility debt yield plus equity risk premium?
Right. It's exactly the same model that your witness, Mr. Lawton, uses.
Did you provide testimony to this commission in docket 10-035-124?
If that's one of those dockets that we discussed earlier, yes, I did.
I can't recall if it's a docket that Ms. Schmidt referenced, but I'm going to go ahead and hand you what I'm going to mark as OCS cross number 2.
For the record, I believe DPU cross exhibit 5. Refers to docket 10-035-124.
You might have a slightly different excerpt, so. Does that testimony look familiar?
Yes.
If you'll turn to page that has the footer, page 31. The second page of the handout I just gave to you.
Yes, I'm there.
I'm going to begin reading at line 655. And at this point in time, I need to apologize. I changed the font in these Word documents to a font that uses a little bit less toner. And so the line numbers may not match the exhibit that was presented by the division. So as I reference the line numbers, those line numbers will be, most likely will be specific to OCS cross number 2. Your testimony beginning on line 655 of OCS cross number 2 reads, quote, I conclude that an ROE of 10.5% is reasonable for setting rates. This ROE is well within my DCF range. Under current market conditions, I discount the bond yield plus risk premium results because interest rates on high-quality debt are currently artificially depressed by government monetary policy and the continuing turbulence of the equity capital markets, period, end quote. Did I read that correctly?
Yes.
So in your testimony in this docket, when the government monetary policy artificially depresses interest rates and results in turbulence in the equity capital markets, the bond yield plus risk premium result is the only one that can see through the noise. But when those same existing conditions existed in at the time you filed this testimony in docket 1035-124, not only did you fully discount the bond yield plus risk premium results, but you also relied upon the DCF to provide your recommendation.
Mr. Coleman, again, I'm sorry, but in the middle of part of your predicate, and I'm not sure I even remember exactly what you said, but what you said was not correct. These are not exactly the same conditions that existed back then. The Fed's quantitative easing policies were starting to be at full bore. Now the quantitative easing policies are half removed and will be ended by the end of this year, according to their recent statements. So it's very difficult to agree, and I can't sit here and say yes or no to questions where you put things like that into the predicate of the question. I'm sorry.
Okay. Your testimony read, I read your testimony correctly.
Yes.
One last exhibit. Did you you provided testimony to this commission, rebuttal testimony to this commission in docket 11035-200? Remember doing that?
Yes.
I'm going to go ahead and hand you an excerpt from that testimony.
Thank you.
For the record, I marked the extract from 10035-124 as OCS Cross Exhibit 2.
Right.
Okay.
Yes, thank you. Does testimony look familiar?
Yes.
Have you turn to the second page of the exhibit, which was after I changed the font, page 18 of your rebuttal testimony in that docket. And beginning on line 354 of OCS cross number 3, your testimony reads, quote, if an analyst were to recommend an ROE that was outside the range of all models, he or she would clearly be required to provide some reasonable justification for doing so, period, end quote. Correct? I read that correctly?
Yes.
Your recommendation today is 10.0%.
That's right.
Correct? And did any of the models that you ran for your rebuttal testimony include 10.0% in their results?
Yes. Mr. Lawton's did. Mr. Gorman's did, one of Mr. Peterson's did, and as I explained, and you said here at the end of this sentence that you would need to explain why we'd make a recommendation out of that range, I did explain that. And that was in my rebuttal testimony.
That was the other people's models that you modified said those.
Yes, and I said that in my summary earlier this morning.
So the reasonable, just so I understand, the reasonable support that you provide is that when you modified models run by Mr. Lawton, Mr. Peterson, and Mr. Gorman, they came up with more than 10%.
I did not modify them. They're in Mr. Lawton's testimony. Take a look. His risk premium range is 975 to 10%.
So you rely upon his testimony and not yours?
I'm explaining to you that there are other numbers out there that widen the range. I didn't change the way I run my models. I simply updated them with the numbers, and I explained why. Interest rates have dropped back since the beginning of the year. They may go up more by the end of the year. But there are clearly models in this record that support not just 9.8, that's the top end of my risk premium range, but 10% and more. And I did not modify those models to get there. I did, in my rebuttal of Mr. Gorman, go ahead and show that we have a disagreement about the inverse relationship between interest rates and risk premiums. It's an ongoing disagreement that this commission has had to endure for a long time, and that his risk premium model, one of them, would have produced 10.5%. So in my rebuttal testimony, I continued to support 10, and I provided all of that information about what all the models showed.
So you feel like you met your own established threshold for
well, I certainly, the second part of...
I'm sorry. You feel like you met your own established threshold for providing a recommendation outside of the models that you ran.
Well, the last line of the sentence that you read correctly said it would clearly be required to provide a reasonable justification for doing so. And that's what I'm providing.
You believe you met that threshold?
I believe I did.
And you were asked earlier by the division about whether Questar was a comparable company, and the answer was no in your analysis.
I did not use them in my comparable group, I believe is what she asked me. Okay.
And was there any Questar data presented and incorporated in any analysis that you, any of the analytical models that you ran that you presented in your testimony?
In this case? No.
You testified recently in the Entergy Arkansas case, did you not?
Yes.
And do you recall your recommendation in that case?
That was sort of a funny case. The commission, the company's president said that he selected an ROE of 10.4 as the request in that case based on three witnesses' data. And my analytical models were lower. So while I said in that testimony that I understood his reasoning and agreed with it, I did not recommend the 10.4.
What did you recommend?
I don't remember in rebuttal what the numbers were, but I wasn't asked to say this is what the number would be without any of the other considerations that the president of the company discussed.
Okay. Do you recall what the commission ordered in that case?
It's under review even as we sit here, but they went below their staff to a number of 10.3%. which I think was the lowest ROE for an integrated electric company other than one unusual, some people say, penalty case in Hawaii. So it was arguably the lowest ROE set during 2013.
Would that be 9.3 as opposed
9.3,
to
9.3?
9.3, yes. 9.3. So that's a data point that's actually included in your analysis in this in your rebuttal testimony today,
yes,
correct?
Yes, I included it.
Because that's part of the fourth quarter results that lead to the 2013 annual average for authorized equity returns for vertically integrated electric companies.
That's right.
That's a relevant data point.
I don't think it's relevant because it's under reconsideration and hopefully it's going to be raised. It's not such an outlier.
You included it in your analysis.
RRA included it in their analysis, and if it is changed on reconsideration, they'll go back and make a correction to it.
It makes up part of the number that you include in table one of your rebuttal.
Yes, no question about it. We didn't exclude it. We used it because it was reported by RRA.
Okay. And when you provided your direct testimony in this case of 10.0 as the appropriate ROE for Rocky Mountain Power, do you know what the then existing approved Questar rate was approved by this commission?
1035.
And And so you felt it was appropriate to recommend a number lower than the existing Questar rate?
I didn't know what it was when I wrote the direct testimony.
Okay. And your recommendation in docket 11-035-200 was 10.2 in your direct testimony?
Third time, yes.
Yes. And your rebuttal testimony stayed at 10.2?
Yes.
And do you know the then existing approved Questar rate approved by this commission when you made those recommendations?
When I made my rebuttal recommendation?
When you made both your rebuttal and your direct testimony recommendations in docket 11-35-200, do you know the then approved Questar ROE rate?
I do now because I've read the commission's order. I did not know that when I prepared my direct testimony. I did know it when I prepared my rebuttal testimony.
So today you're aware that you have made three recommendations to this commission for an appropriate ROE for Rocky Mountain Power that were lower than the then existing Questar rate approved by this commission?
The 1035?
Yes.
Numerically, that's true, but I'd never thought about it till you brought it up.
I have no further questions.
Captain Jernigan.
No questions.
No questions.
My apologies. At this point in time, I do need to go back and move for admission of OCS cross exhibits 1, 2, and 3 into the record.
Any objections? They're received. Redirect, Mr. Monson.
Thank you. Dr. Hathaway, you were asked some questions based on DPU Cross 3, that is the SNL report of various rates of return awarded in 3 years. And you wanted to explain why you didn't think the average, just excluding the Virginia cases, was accurate or reliable. Could you now go ahead and explain that?
Yes. If we might look at my rebuttal exhibit, SCH2R, I think we can make this very clear. We've talked about these numbers at various places during the cross-examination. It's, in my opinion, sometimes confusing if we just take the RRA data and look at it, because it's a lot of cases, a lot of different things, and you've heard the cross about whether it's 30 or 32 or whatever cases. So what we try to do is to parse out these cases so that we're looking at ROEs allowed for companies just like the subject company. Rocky Mountain Power is a vertically integrated company. They have generation, so forth. There are other companies in Virginia that have rate cases that only involve power plants where they have special adders. So in this exhibit, we exclude those, and so does RRA when they discuss the average allowed rate of return. But we also show on this exhibit the delivery-only cases, because when I've testified in delivery-only cases, I've been asked many, many times, aren't these companies operationally less risky? The rating agencies say that they are, and we have to agree that they are. If you look at this exhibit, we look at the delivery-only companies, and then we compare, that's in the second row of data, and you compare those to the average for the vertically integrated companies, which go right along the bottom. On average, there's a 40 basis point lower ROE allowed for the T&D companies. Now, not everybody agrees that that's right, but that's what is reflected. The rating agencies say that operationally T&D companies are less risky than integrated companies, and the arguments go from there. But the point is, the number that has been mentioned in more than one place here includes those T&D companies in the average. so it makes the trend look like it's going down more than it is. The purpose of this exhibit is to provide the data that you could use to parse that out and decide for yourself what the right comparison is. And I didn't think that I got that clearly, that point clearly made back during the cross-examination.
Thank you. And then one other, well, a couple more questions. And I don't want to belabor this issue because we've spent a lot of time on it this morning, but and maybe if you think it's clear, Dr. Hathaway, don't just let me know. But you've been asked a lot of questions about a supposed change of position where you used to rely on the DCF model in one case, and now you rely on the risk premium model more. You think it's more indicative. I think you've testified in cross that in response to questions that there's been a change in circumstances. Can you just briefly explain what that is again so that the record's clear?
Well, really, there are at least two things there. One, certainly the markets are evolving. We're moving from a very serious financial crisis out to hopefully a better situation. The first quarter of this year, though, the cold weather and other things caused the gross domestic product not to grow. In fact, the corrected version now says it went down slightly. So all these things have contributed to sort of a hiccup in this, what's happening with interest rates. The other thing about all of these cases is, though, I don't believe in the many times that I've read your orders or the orders of this commission that you've relied strictly on this is the only kind of model to use. In most commissions where I testify, they don't do that. So that's what I was trying to explain. And fortunately, the division went all the way back to the 2009 case, where I didn't say the DCF model was wrong, but I recommended an ROE that was 100 to 150 basis points lower than the DCF results because I looked at the other things that were going on at the time. And so this idea that I've always recommended the top end of the range or the top end model is simply not correct if you consider the cases that Ms. Schmidt put out there before you. In the last two cases, it is true. I've discounted the DCF model in this case, and I discounted the risk premium model in the prior case when the full force of the quantitative easing policies was in place. So I appreciate the opportunity to make it clear that it's not just the models. I don't think Mr. Peterson or anyone else should go down to a very low range and offer to reduce this company's ROE when in fact interest rates, even with the reductions that have occurred since the beginning of the year, are still higher than they were back when that 9.8 was set. And that's been my whole point on this. But it is simply not true in the broader context of things that I've always picked the ROE from the highest model, as Mr. Peterson attempted to say in his testimony, in his server rebuttal testimony, and as I believe Ms. Schmidt intended to say in her cross-examination today. But I appreciate the opportunity to explain that.
That's all I have.
Commissioner LaVar.
Thank you. And I'll apologize to the extent that this might be somewhat repetitive, but there was a lot of discussion during cross-examination about the 20 base point difference between your recommendation in 2012 and your recommendation today. What would you say are the two or three most significant drivers of that difference?
Back when we did the analysis for the other case, the DCF results were higher. They were like, I don't remember exactly, they're in some of these exhibits, but they were above 10.2. And so we selected something out of that range at 10.2 back at that time because that's what those models were saying. And we rejected or at least discounted the risk premium results because that's when the Fed was really laying in on the quantitative easing and pushing down interest rates. So that's why they turned out to be different. Now we have sort of just the reverse. The Fed is reducing its policy, and the DCF model, because the stock market has gone up, dividend yields have been pushed down, analysts, Value Line and others say they believe utility stocks may be overpriced. And therefore, analysts have reduced their growth rates. So when you put those yield plus growth numbers together in the DCF model, today you get lower ROE estimates than you got 2 years ago, substantially lower. even though interest rates have gone up from that time. So the model is just out of sync. It'll catch up. Whenever we all get back kind of to an equilibrium situation, the model is fine. People are going to continue to use it, but it's out of sync right now.
I have a couple of questions too. And my question is going to be somewhat like Mr. Monson's to you. And I suppose it also relates to your characterization of a model being out of sync. I'm trying to understand what quantitatively allows you or any analyst to make that judgment. I'm going to set aside the results of this model because they're out of sync. And so the way I'd like to frame this for you is, if we look at the period of time and the proceeding, the commission proceeding, where you favored the results of the DCF models and discounted the results of risk premium models, in relation to your position in this proceeding, where the your preferences are reversed. Rather than, if you can, using the term turmoil in the markets, what are the quantitative, what are the input changes that are driving those, that reversal in position of the results of those models?
If I get too much into the textbook mode here, just tell me that's not what you want to hear. But if I may, if we can go back to the 2009 case that Ms. Smith finally asked me about, we didn't use the DCF results there because utility stock prices, right along with everything else, had been really hammered and pushed down. By March of 2009, the S&P had fallen by 50% and utilities had fallen not quite that much. But I looked at the model results then, and those low prices were caused by just an extraordinary event that had occurred. And so the dividend yields at that time were way up and produced ROEs from the DCF model in the 11 and even 12% range. So our requested ROE was not based on that model because of the unusual circumstances. What's happened now, and when I was answering Commissioner LaVar's question, this is what I was trying to say, is utility stock prices, right along with the rest of the market, have been pushed up now because investors, for whatever reason, are extremely optimistic. I can't read the tea leaves any better than anyone else. But many people, analysts, particularly Value Line, where we get our data, seem to think that we're probably overpriced. 12 times we've hit all-time high in the S&P, as I was asked about earlier. And in that environment, the analysts that look at utilities have reduced their expected growth rates in earnings for utilities, even though the economy is improving. Analyst growth rates have come down. Well, in my experience, that happens when analysts are just not optimistic about the industry. They don't want to be making recommendations that, you know, the stock prices are okay or maybe going to go up. And the way analysts that follow utilities are able to communicate that is they reduce their projected growth rates. And that's what we've seen. Well, G, the second term in the DCF model, comes from those growth rates in some of my models and in all of some of the other models. So that's gone down. That's one quantitative factor. Dividend yields have gone down to below 4% for many utilities now, which is historically low, because of this run-up in stock prices. The argument that markets are efficient and that simply reflects a reduction in the cost of equity are beyond where most textbooks go now. There are events that occur that say that the market goes to extremes. And that's what I'm trying to explain. The current dividend yields are understated because they've been pushed down because investors don't have any other choices, and the growth rates have been pushed down because analysts are not optimistic. but it's a matter of opinion about what that all really means. To me, the test is did the DCF sort of track the rest of the market as reflected by long-term interest rates, and no, it hasn't. It's actually gone in exactly the opposite direction from interest rates. So quantitatively, that's why I think it's appropriately now to place weight on the risk premium, but not on the low DCF results.
Thank you. Any questions based on ours? Thank you, Dr. Hadaway. You're excused.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Monson, from the applicant?
No, that's it. Thanks.
Ms. Schmidt.
Thank you. The division would like to call Mr. Charles Peterson as its witness. Could Mr. Peterson please be sworn?
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you're about to give should be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth? Thank you. Please be seated, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Peterson, could you please state your full name, employer, and business address for the record?
Yes, my name is Charles E. Peterson, spelled S-O-N, and I'm a technical consultant for the Division of Public Utilities, and I'm employed in this building, which is the Heber Wells Building on the fourth floor, 160 East South, 300 South in Salt Lake City.
On behalf of the division, have you participated in this docket?
Yes.
Did you prepare and cause to be filed what we have listed here as DPU exhibit number 1.10 COC through DPU exhibit number 1.15 COC, and those pertain to your direct testimony, and then DPU exhibit number 1.0 SR and 1.1 SR, which pertain to your surrebuttal testimony?
Yes.
Do you have any substantive changes?
No.
To your answers? The division would like to move for the admission of DPU exhibits 1.10 COC through 1.15 COC and 1.0 SR and 1.1 SR at this time.
Any objections? They're received.
Do you have a summary you would like to give today?
Yes. Do you want me to proceed then?
Please proceed.
Yes. One, before I do the summary, I would like to make a correction to Dr. Hadaway's statement, and I'm sure it was inadvertent, but I only, in my testimony, represented that the last two rate cases were his recommended ROE was at the top of his range. I recognize that in previous cases he had a much more nuanced approach. Good morning. It's still morning. Pacific Corp, doing business as Rocky Mountain Power, has filed a general rate case in which it is requesting a return on equity of 10.0%, which is 0.2% or 20 basis points higher than its currently authorized allowed rate of return of 9.8%. Just to flesh out some the value of that to the commission, each 10 basis points results in an approximate change in the company's revenue requirement in Utah of $5 million or so. So the 20 basis point increase that the company is requesting is roughly $10 million of the increase the company's requesting in this case. None of the witnesses that you have heard or will hear today has demonstrated or even claimed to have demonstrated that actual investors in actual markets expect to receive as a number as high as 10% for a return on equity for investments similar to Pacific Corp. The witnesses for the office, for the federal executive agencies, and I all believe that the authorized ROE today should be below 9.5%. Arguably, the company expert, Dr. Hadaway, who you've just heard, in his rebuttal testimony, estimates that a range up to about 9.8% is appropriate. And he has just, as you've just heard, he admits that he has to reach outside of his own calculations to continue to recommend a 10% ROE for his client. My point estimate is 9.25%, but I have suggested that if the Commission wishes to invoke the principle of gradualism in this case, then it may be appropriate to award an ROE toward the upper end of a reasonable range, which I suggest is about 9.5%. There is general agreement among the parties for this case that regarding cost of debt and capital structure, the company's request as set forth in Mr. Williams' testimony should be accepted. And as Mr. Williams mentioned this morning, I've raised an issue that the company's relatively high capital structure with respect to equity may no longer be justifiable, and I was encouraged that Mr. Williams today said that the company intends, as circumstances allow, to continue to reduce that equity percentage. In sum, I recommend a cost of equity figure of 9.25% based upon the capital structure set forth in Mr. Williams and based upon the capital structure set forth in Mr. Williams' testimony, a rebuttal testimony specifically, an overall weighted average cost of capital of 7.28%. And this concludes my comments.
Mr. Peterson is now available for cross-examination questions and questions from the Commission.
Mr. Coleman?
I have no questions for Mr. Peterson. Thank you.
Captain Jernigan?
No questions. No questions, thank you.
No questions. Mr. Monson?
I have a few questions. Mr. Peterson, good morning.
Hello.
In your summary that you just gave, you said that none of the witnesses are telling the Commission that investors expect to receive a rate of return on utility stocks for a utility like Pacific Corp of 10%. Did I understand that correctly?
Market conditions right now do not reflect or support that, the 10%, and I believe all witnesses outside of Dr. Hadaway would agree with that. And even Dr. Hadaway just testified, as I understood his testimony, that he has to reach outside of his own calculations, he calls them technical calculations now, in order to continue to support the 10% figure.
Even in one of your risk premium analyses, you got a result higher than 10%, didn't you?
I did, but I do not consider that to be reliable at all in this case.
And so did Mr. Lawton and Mr. Gorman.
Well, they'll have to answer for themselves. But
you didn't read their testimony?
I read their testimony, but their conclusions do not support a 10% figure.
But they had risk premium results that were higher than 10%, didn't they?
They showed the numbers, but they obviously gave very little weight to them.
Right. And so when you say that, first of all, I wanted to clarify, you aren't saying that Dr. Hadaway doesn't say that investors would expect a return of 10%, are you?
Would you repeat the question?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
When you said that none of the witnesses have told the Commission that investors expect a return of 10%, I assume you weren't including Dr. Hadaway in that statement.
I was including Dr. Hadaway in that statement. Dr. Hadaway just testified that the market conditions right now do not support what he thinks is a reasonable estimate of 10%. His own indicators do not support 10%. His rebuttal testimony indicators, none of them go above 9.8.
So I'm sorry, were you through?
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Okay. So, so you're basing that statement solely on the results of the models that he ran in his rebuttal testimony. Is that right? For, with regard to Dr. Hathaway?
Well, yes. The models that you run are supposed to give indications of what investors are expecting in the marketplace. That is the intent of the models. Dr. Hathaway seems to reject those models entirely and picks and chooses a few isolated numbers that I and other witnesses have decided to put in our testimony as support for continuing the continuing advocacy of 10.0%.
Okay, but isn't by definition his recommendation of a 10% ROE an indication that he believes that's what investors expect from the, if there were a common stock of Pacific Corp, which there isn't, but
I do not believe he said that. I think I may be wrong. I'd have to review the transcript, but I do not think he said that investors today are investing, are buying and selling in the market with an expectation of receiving 10% or more.
Okay. Well, let me just ask you a couple of other things. How many CAPM studies did you do, and how many results did you get in your analysis?
Well, I run several models with different assumptions, different beta assumptions and risk-free rates that are based on different periods of time, averages of different periods of time. I would have to add up the exact number, but there are several.
So I think on one of your exhibits you show 5 results, but did you run more than that? You know,
if my exhibits show 5, we could go and count them. Then that would be how many I ran.
Okay, but you didn't use all those in your range of a reasonable ROE, did you?
No.
Why not?
I believe that the lower numbers were outside of a reasonable range that I wanted to offer the commission.
So just as Commissioner Clark asked Dr. Hathaway, as an expert witness, you do exclude the results of some models when you think that they aren't reasonable.
Yes, and also exclude them when they're on the high range.
Right, and in fact, you did that with the risk premium analyses you did, because one of those was over 10%, but you didn't include 10% in the high end of your range.
That's correct.
But you did include a CAPM result of 8.65%, right?
Yes, I believe that was the highest CAPM result, and I included that at the low end of my reasonable range.
But you also considered risk premium results that were below 8.65%, didn't you? They're on your chart.
No, they may be on my chart, but the reasonable range, if they're below the 8.65, then I would have put basically no weight on them in the final consideration.
You acknowledge in your testimony that Pacific Corp has a higher risk profile than Questar Gas. Is that right?
I would generally believe that Questar Gas is a less risky company than Pacific Corp, yes.
Are you aware that this week that Barclays has issued a downgrade of all electric sector stocks? I mean bonds, I'm sorry. Have you heard that news?
Barclays?
Barclays.
I haven't heard that.
Okay. Assuming for a minute that's correct, would that further indicate that electrics are more risky than they were a short time ago?
Well, in view of, I guess, in the opinion, in the published opinion of Barclays, their published opinion, I guess, is lower, or that they're more risky. I'm making assumptions about what Barclays says. when we're talking about whether they're risky or not riskier, that they are, the companies and the industry is what it is, and of course at discrete periods of time, various analysts and rating agencies will publish their opinions about them. But
okay, you refer in your testimony to the Questar Gas rate case order, the recent rate case order that, in which the commission found a 9.85% ROE just and reasonable. Is that right?
Did I reference it, or?
You referenced it.
I did reference it, yes. I'm aware of that decision.
That's what I'm getting to. So you're aware of that decision. And are you aware also that the commission historically over the past several years has typically found a higher ROE for Rocky Mountain Power or for Pacific Core than it has for Questar Gas?
That it typically has. There's been very few litigated cases involving both companies at the same time. The most recent was the 2007 case that were cases that were just about one on top of the other. So I don't know what the typical
is. Do you remember
is.
The results in that case, those cases?
Not offhand, I don't. But based upon the discussion that we just had, if you litigate those Pacific Corp and Questar Gas at the same time with presumably the same models, then Questar Gas should have a lower ROE than Pacific Corp, if that's what you're getting at. That would be my general expectation in recent years as it's come out earlier in today. Questar Gas, in fact, has had a higher ROE than Pacific Corp.
During the past some years, while they had the 10.35 and Pacific Corp agreed to the 9.8. Is that what you're referring to?
Yes, okay. Specifically.
Okay. You and your testimony try to explain this 9.85 result as a step in gradualism. Is that correct?
Since the division does not understand fully the commission's decision, that's an interpretation. That's one interpretation that the commission did not move further in its ROE determination.
And you'd agree with me that there's no mention of gradualism in that decision in connection with the ROE decision.
I would agree the word does not appear.
And there's no indication, using other words, that's why the commission did what it did. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And I've got a copy of some excerpts from the order. Maybe it's more efficient if I pass it out. So may I do that?
Yes.
That there was a question raised as to whether or not I requested admission of DPU exhibits 1 through 1.15, and if I did not, I would like to move for the admission of those.
They've been received, I believe, but
just in case.
They are received.
Thank you.
Mr. Monson, before you continue, do you have a sense of sort of how long we're going to?
This is about it.
Okay. All right, then we'll.
A couple more minutes.
We'll keep going.
Mr. Peterson, this is the order that we've been talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay, and in fact, when the commission did explain at least why it rejected the division's recommendation and the office's recommendation, on the bottom of page 33 and the top of page 34, isn't that correct?
There is one sentence that gives some explanation.
And that sentence reads, while we declined to grant Questar's request to maintain a 10.35% return on equity, We also find the evidence of record shows a 9.25 or 9.45 return on equity is too low to support properly Questar's operations. Is that what the commission said?
You read it correctly.
Okay. And in that case, the division's recommended ROE was actually 20 basis points higher than your recommended ROE in this case. Is that correct?
That's correct.
That's all I have.
Redirect, Ms. Schmidt.
Just one. Do you believe that the Questar Gas decision we've discussed mandates or strongly supports an ROE of 10.0 for Rocky Mountain Power now?
I do not.
Thank you.
Questions? Commissioner LaVar.
Thank you, Mr. Peterson. This first question is a minor one, but do you have your testimony in front of you?
Yes.
On page 17 of your direct, on table 4, you have it's authorized return of equity by state for Pacific Corp. You have a not applicable listed under California. Could you explain that to me?
Well, I actually intended that to mean not available.
Oh, not available, okay.
Maybe this is more than you want to know. We tried calling the California Commission to find out what the authorized rate of return was, and nobody seemed to know. So this was getting late in the preparation of this testimony, and so rather than trying to track it down through Pacific Corp, we just left it like that.
Okay, thank you. That answers that question. And just one other question. I suppose I'll take the prerogative to take administrative notice of your recommendation in the 2012 rate case with the Corp, where your recommended ROE was 5 basis points higher than what you're recommending in this case.
Yes.
What would you describe as the two or three most significant drivers behind that change in your recommendation?
Well, of course, stock prices fluctuate, and analysts' forecasts also fluctuate. But the 5 basis point difference is primarily due to that stock prices are a little bit higher for electric utilities, that it has forced down, or the result is that dividend yields are reduced. Even though dividends have increased a little bit since that time, the stock prices have increased even more for electric utilities. So that's the main driver. The market reflects a little bit higher stock price and lower dividend yields. Okay.
I have a question or two, Mr. Peterson. On the subject of gradualism, rate stability, and the starting points for proceedings like this one being the existing authorized return on equity, you reference all of those concepts. Are those appropriate considerations in your mind as the commission reviews the recommendations of the experts that testify before it?
Yes, I think they're important. Questar Gas case, the various analysts and witnesses in that case were developing their analyses from a little bit different market situation from last summer than I was doing this spring. So there have been changes in the market situations from that time period, which at least partially explains why my ROE is lower than the division's recommendation in the Questar case. And You know, with respect to the principle of gradualism, I think that's a valid regulatory principle in that it's been in effect for a long time. And I've cited in my testimony references where that has been specifically invoked by commissions in dealing with rates of return. In years past, when you've seen, for example, dramatic shifts in the market, it's appropriate for commissions to not make a knee-jerk reaction and just match the market gyrations. But we haven't been in a dramatic shift lately. So I would disagree with Dr. Hadaway's continuing characterizations of the markets being in turmoil. If he means that they're always fluctuating and that there's always stuff going on, I guess that's true. But they are relatively stable, and I would say that they're in equilibrium. But maybe I have a different definition of equilibrium from his. But yes, to make a short answer, yes, I think that those are all factors to consider when the commission deliberates its decision in this case.
That concludes my questioning. Do you have an objection to that, Ms. Schmidt?
I do not.
Yeah, Mr. Monson, go ahead.
Thank you.
I thought you might.
It's just on this. I hadn't focused on this California thing. I'm sorry. But would you accept, subject to check, that the authorized ROE in California is over 10%? Subject to check.
I would accept that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Peterson, you're excused. Off the record. So we're evaluating whether we break for lunch, whether we press